Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. Since I can't do a live show, I'm going to try to make this announcement as much in real time as I possibly can. We're going to air this show in the next day or so because in my inbox this morning came an incredible announcement, and this is so important. Here's the headline, and I have verified this. I've seen the FBI's own writing on this. The FBI hunts for suspected Iranian assassin targeting Trump-era officials, and I will make it simple. Soleimani was targeted under Trump. Mike Pompeo and others were involved in that, and this guy, Majid Dastashani Farahani, is in the United States for the purpose of assassinating them. Okay, so this is what it says. The U.S. government is intensifying a manhunt for an Iranian intelligence operative who the Federal Bureau of Investigation believes has been plotting to assassinate current and former American officials, including one-time Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. The FBI's Miami field office on Friday issued a public alert seeking information on Majid Dastashani Farahani, a suspected member of Iran's Ministry of Intelligence and Security, who the Bureau alleged has been recruiting individuals for operations in the U.S. to include lethal targeting of current and former U.S. government officials. I'm going to go on. They're not clear why the FBI issued its warning in Florida, but the U.S. government warned in the most wanted notice on Friday that Farahani speaks Spanish and frequently moves between Iran and Venezuela. The Iranian government has repeatedly vowed over the past 4 years to avenge the 2020 death of Major General Qasem Soleimani, a commander of the Iran elite Quds Force, whom the Trump administration assassinated in Baghdad drone strike in his convoy. The DOJ indicted members of Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps in 2022 for allegedly plotting to murder Trump's former National Security Advisor John Bolton, who served in the White House in the months leading up to Soleimani's death. U.S. officials told Semaphore they believe, this is the outlet, Semaphore, they believe Pompeo and Trump's special envoy for Iran, Ryan Hook, are also on Tehran's hit list. The U.S. government is currently providing both men with around-the-clock security due to the severity of the threat. All right, so that's enough of that those details, but I just want you to know. And I also heard from friends on the inside that this man was allowed into this country, allowed to come in. Now, you know that we've been giving Iran tons of money. They're making money hand over fist through oil production because President Biden shut down our production here. We can't drill. We can't use pipelines. And so the Russia and Iran and others are flourishing. Venezuela? Because America, at the end of Trump's administration, was the largest producer of oil and shale in the world, but no longer. So we have enriched Iran, our enemy, and now this. So I'm just telling you, we need to be vigilant, and we also need to be in prayer, because this could get very ugly very quickly. Well, today on the show, this is going to be an interview or a conversation that I had with Gordon Chang about China. And of course, China and Iran are working together, in case you didn't realize that. Hezbollah, Hamas, it goes all over the map. You know, it was a famous Chinese war strategist who famously said, "The enemy of my enemy is my friend." So, in other words, all of our enemies are working together because, as enemies of our country, they become friends. The war between them will break out after that, but that's exactly what's happening. Well, of course, first, I need to tell you that you're listening to Sandy Rios 24/7. If you have a concern or want to just leave a message, call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can find us on Facebook, Sandy Rios 24/7. You can go to afr.net to listen to the podcast or any podcast platform, or you can go to sandyrios.com. One of the things I write about in my book is I was a young woman in Berlin, Germany, 21 actually, when I moved there. And I was at headquarters. It was called Berlin Brigade. And I needed a piece of paper. I was up to something. And it wasn't my office. I didn't have an office there, but it was an empty office. And I opened a drawer to look for some paper. And there, staring me in the face, were pictures of aborted babies. I had never heard of such a thing. I didn't even understand what abortion really was. I knew it was the death of a baby, but how they did it, what it looked like. And as I pulled those pictures out, it was like a knife in my heart. That is really the birth of my passion to save babies. And that's why I'm so proud to have Preborn as a sponsor. I love what they do. I love that they show the baby in the womb to these moms. And the moms see what I see, only the opposite. The life that they see motivates them not to harm their baby or allow anyone else to do it. The photos that I saw motivated me to fight whoever it is that's tearing babies apart, destroying them in the womb. It's very interesting. It's life. It's God quickening our spirit one way or the other. And so Preborn accomplishes this. They save hundreds of thousands of babies' lives every year. And they do that by showing the moms this very sophisticated ultrasound. And that's what we're all about here. This is our mission on Sandy Rios 24/7. All you have to do is go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy and make your best donation. Well, coming up, you're going to hear my interaction with Gordon Chang at CPAC. It was a great interaction, and you're going to learn a lot. So sit back and enjoy today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.
From American Family Radio, Sandy Rios.
We are not called to be nice. We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
I think the most important thing we need to demonstrate to our children is genuineness, that we actually believe what we say we believe.
A longtime Fox News contributor, Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
Seek justice, not social justice, but God's justice, what's right and what's wrong.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association,
a pro-life radio talk show host.
We've got to say this is the line. Life is sacred.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something. Okay, Sandy Rios coming to you live from Radio Row at CPAC 2024. It's quieter now. It's actually kind of peaceful. Well, that doesn't mean there's nobody here. There's still a lot of people, a lot of media, but it's just kind of a quieter time. It's a great time for me to interview one of my favorite pundits. His name is Gordon Chang. Gordon is the author of a new book. I hadn't even heard about this book, Gordon. China's Going to War. And we have to talk about that. Let me also say that I found out two nights ago when I went to the International Summit here at CPAC that you are on the board of CPAC, which is that new for you?
I've been on the board for, this is a test of memory. I probably should ask my wife because she'll have a better idea, but it's been about 3 years.
Okay. Well, that's wonderful. That's great to know. I'm glad you're in that position. You know, I remember, okay, you don't have to comment, but let me say, CPAC wasn't always this way. They certainly didn't talk about this. They were just not nearly so conservative and vocal as Matt is. And so there were a lot of conflicts in the past, and I'm talking about a couple of decades ago, 15 years ago, whatever. But it's refreshing to see Matt just be fearless and take on things that other people won't take on.
Yeah. We must become a moral nation again. We must again become a nation of faith, and Matt has been a leader in that.
Absolutely. And then on J6, nobody wants to talk about J6. A lot of people don't know about it, really what the truth is about it. And Matt's been fearless on that, even set up a fund, you know, to help fund. This is something I talk about a lot on my show, Gordon. But anyway, it's very enriching. So you participated the International Summit, and I have discussed it. I've talked about it several times here at CPAC on the road. But I wondered, you know, there were leaders from all over the world. What comment or moment comes to your mind that was really important or struck you in a new way?
You know, I guess it was Nigel Farage talking about the infiltration of England by dangerous elements. Because we were discussing the reaction to the October 7th attack on Israel. And he was saying that there have been, you know, all of these demonstrations in England. And he was attributing this to just misguided immigration policies, where you now have these large communities which have not integrated into English society. And really what they've been doing is been promoting barbarism, rape, terrorism, and the attacks on Israel. And so Nigel Farage was discussing how this has changed British politics.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking as he was saying that, because that really struck me too. Several years ago, when my husband and I first got married, we took a quick trip to London. I do mean quick, 5 days. But it was Christmas, and we arrived on Christmas Day. And we went down to the square, and there were hardly any cars. There were a lot of people just walking around. It was like in the snow. The Parliament was there, Big Ben, and all of those. I know you've been right there, and it was just beautiful. We spent so much time there. And what Nigel said was that it's now filled with Hamas supporters. They're there rallying, I guess, night and day for the most part. And so it's not even a safe place. It's not even a safe place for people of London to go right now.
Yes, and that is the tragedy. And this happened because of unrestricted immigration from dangerous societies. And this means that we have a challenge in the West to defend our values against large segments of our own population.
So, of course, that is the perfect transition to talk about what China's doing. And Gordon, you and I have been talking for so long. And it's always the same but different. And it's always worse. Every time I talk to you, it's worse. So we have, I don't know what word, because I have to be accurate, thousands, I'll say thousands, of Chinese military we believe to be part of the CSP coming across the southern border. I don't know about the northern, because I think New Hampshire, whatever borders up there, New Hampshire isn't even guarded, so we don't even know about that. For a time, I heard that it was a lot of Chinese who had money, who wanted to get out of the oppression of China. But now, has it changed? Is my impression correct that it's changed to be more military-aged young men?
Yeah, your impression is correct. Because if we go back to 3 years ago, Sandy, the few Chinese migrants who were coming in were basically middle-class Chinese who had given up everything and just were desperate. So they wanted to live in the U.S. Now, 80 to 90% of the Chinese migrants surging across our southern border are single-age, are military-age men traveling without family groups, pretending not to speak English, some of them conducting Chinese military rituals as they make their way up through Central America. And U.S. Border Patrol knows that some of them actually have links to the Chinese military. And we have seen, especially since the end of January, video evidence of some very disturbing activities by Chinese migrants. So, for instance, on the Defiant America website, there are videos of Chinese migrants who've been in the U.S. less than 3 weeks, came in the U.S. without money, without identification, and taking target practice with pistols and rifles. So, you know, this is just, if you were a recent, you know, arrival in the U.S., you know, with nothing but your backpack, I mean, you'd be thinking about, like, where's my next meal coming from? Where am I going to live? You know, can I get a job? You wouldn't be thinking of sharpening your skills to kill humans unless, of course, that's why you arrived. So this has been from other sources. They've seen Chinese migrants taking target practice. So this is not just an isolated website. Blaine Holt, who is a retired U.S. Air Force general, has been tracking this as well. So, and he's in a location which obviously was different than the one which was pictured in the Defiant America website. So we know this is happening across our country. There are reports of really other disturbing activities on the part of Chinese migrants. So we've just got to be really concerned that we have soldiers and operatives here. And we're talking not hundreds, but we're talking, as you say, thousands.
Gordon, are you able to tell us about the rituals? Or are they just too dark to even verbalize?
Well, I mentioned that Michael Yon, who's the great war correspondent, who was the first one to bring this to the attention of Americans, was saying that in a hotel in Panama, the Chinese migrants coming up were buying live chickens, slaughtering them, and drinking the blood, which happens to be a thing that they do in the Chinese military. So
to prepare, right? To prepare for battle, right? Is that right?
Yeah, it's a ritual to prepare for battle, you know, to show, I guess, bloodthirstiness. So, you know, and Michael and the Rubin brothers.
The ones that do Muckraker?
Muckraker.com.
Yes, yes.
They are all heroes. So Michael works with Anthony Rubin, for instance. And they have been the ones documenting Chinese migrants. Michael, as I said, was the first one to talk about this issue in public.
I actually played a great deal of the most recent video where the brothers traveled to the beginning, the genesis. What is, I can't remember the country, where they fly in and then they make their way up those trails.
They go to Ecuador, which allows visa-free entry for Chinese nationals. And then what they do is they make their way to Colombia. They then walk through the Darien Gap, which is about 70 miles of jungle that separates Colombia from Panama. And then after they clear the gap, and that's a pretty dangerous trail, they then basically get on trucks or trains, and then they make their way to the southern border. And then from there, they decamp, pay off the cartels, and then walk across the U.S. border.
So you told me before, and I have never forgotten, that, correct me if I'm wrong, the Chinese design on the U.S., these are, again, my words, not necessarily all-out war or atomic bombs, but the displacement or destruction of the American population so that they may take our resources. Is that still the case?
Yes. There is reports of a speech by General Chur Haltun, who at the time, and this is the turn of the century, gave a secret speech to the Communist Party, advocating the extermination of the American public. And he said, well, maybe we'll let some live to be our slaves. There have been questions about the veracity of this report, but I can tell you, Sandy, that in China's very tightly controlled public square, the topic of the extermination of Americans is a permitted topic.
Are you kidding?
So we know that this is something the Communist Party, you know, that gives credence to the report about the general's comments. You know, as I said, we don't know for sure, but we do know that Xi Jinping, the Chinese ruler, he actually has been promoting this concept that Chinese rulers not only have the right, but they have the obligation to rule everything under heaven. It's called Tianxia, T-I-A-N-X-I-A, all under heaven. And while we may think that's ludicrous, that's the way they think. And since 2017, Chinese officials have been talking about the moon and Mars as sovereign Chinese territory. So we know that Xi Jinping is the most ambitious aggressor in history.
That's just shocking. I have to let that set. You know, I mean, it's interesting. What strikes me, Gordon, is the Islamic world feels the same way, same but different. They're going to dominate the world, and they think every terrain is theirs.
The global caliphate.
Yes. So they're kind of working together, but at some point, you know, they're going to be enemies. Now, isn't that amazing even to project what that would be like?
Well, yes, of course, because here you have a regime in China that is relentless in its persecution of faith. And then, of course, you have Muslim terrorists that want to have a Muslim caliphate. And those are inconsistent. Also, you know, you look at China and Russia. You know, China believes it should rule the entire world. Vladimir Putin, he's less ambitious. He just wants to rule the Russian Empire at its greatest extent. And those, again, are contradictory. But in the here and now, which is really what's important, you have China and Russia and China and terrorists, Muslim terrorists, working together.
Yes. Isn't that something? I mean, it really is. It's amazing now. I think, you know, oh, now one other thing, before I get to that question, I just read, not maybe 2 weeks ago, that there were something like 200,000 Chinese military at the Panama Canal and more every single day added. Is that accurate?
That I don't know. But, you know, it's possible. but they don't need 200,000 to do what they want. So, point is, China controls both ends of the canal.
Yes, thanks to Jimmy Carter. Right. So Gordon, I think that regular Americans listen to this, and I do allude to this often, but I can't tell. No one can. But what would we expect? Would we expect that they'd go after our grid so that nothing works, nothing's powered, we can't, you know, communicate, we can't drive, we can't go to the grocery store, starvation? I mean, I know this is a dreadful topic, but if people want to, are we talking about attacks in towns? They don't have enough soldiers, really, to here yet.
Yeah.
To do that.
On the first day of war in Asia, we should assume that nothing that is powered by electricity works. We should assume we don't have any water. Your car won't operate. And you probably should assume that for 6 months you have to have enough water and food to get by without being able to go to the supermarket. So really is, we're going to be living in conditions of like the 1850s.
With a lot of death.
Yes, and if in the 1850s, Americans lived off the land. They were self-reliant.
Right, they knew how to do. They knew how to survive.
But we
don't.
Yeah, well, we have a modern society. Modern societies are complex. They are interrelated. Everyone is dependent. It's just very different. So when, you know, you take out electricity from the equation, it means that people don't know how to survive. People don't have the resources to do that. And, you know, there have been estimates that if there were an electromagnetic pulse attack on the U.S., that's a detonation of a nuclear weapon 300-400 miles in the atmosphere, fries all the electronics in the United States, takes out all the electricity. You know, people have said 90% of the American population would die in 6 months. I don't know if it would be that bad, but we're talking about not only the part from the panic, yeah, Americans will die in great numbers. I don't know percentages, but the percentage will be staggering.
Okay, on the counter side, this doesn't balance that, but I also read something else that actually made me smile, at least that, and that was that the Chinese, you know, have taken the lithium, they've like mined it, taken over all these countries that have lithium and gathered it together to be the supplier for lithium batteries for electric cars and all other things that use that. But that now, because at least in the United States, there's no appetite, not much, for electric cars anymore. Some of the rental facilities are dumping these electric cars. And so that particular entity in China has shrunk by, you know, they've lost 80% of their productivity. So what does that mean? Anything or nothing?
Well, if you absolutely dependent on EVs, electric vehicles, China would control everything because it is the lithium superpower, for instance. Because as you say, they have been able to not corner the market, but they've been able to get a lot of the world's lithium mines. Fortunately, lithium is being now discovered elsewhere as people worry about dependence on China. So that's a good thing. But also, the more important thing is that consumers have rejected EVs.
Yes.
Because they're just not practical. And so, although the Biden administration is still pushing it, I don't think that is going to be something that the U.S. will do long term. And by the way, this makes no sense in our world, because that means we have a grid that can't support this. Plus, also, in wartime, we do not want to be dependent on one source of energy. And so this is not good for the United States. It's good for China. It's great for China. But we should not be promoting policies that are great for China and are horrible for us.
Well, that's what the Biden administration has done from day one. That's the shocking thing, Gordon. I understand it because I've been around the block. I understand how wicked people can be, how totalitarian states start and grow and creep and take power. But I can't understand why Biden, I know he can't think well, but he's always been a horrible person from my perspective. What about your children? What about your grandchildren? What are these people that are working on these things think is going to happen to their families? Can't they see they're going to be in the same boat the rest of us are in?
Yeah, That's a question I can't answer, because to me it's just incomprehensible. But, you know, they believe, I suppose, that that's the best future. I guess they believe that it's good for their political standing. I don't know, but it's certainly not good for the United States. It's not good for freedom. It's great for communists around the world, but that shouldn't be our goal.
All right, so I touched on economy, but what is this? What is the fuller picture of the Chinese economy?
China's economy is in great distress. Basically, to understand it, I'd say that they're having their 2008 now. See, in 2008, they decided not to have a downturn, so they embarked on the biggest stimulus program in history. So they didn't have a downturn then, but they're having it now because they overstimulated, they overbuilt their country, they've got too much debt. So, you know, China last year reported that its economy grew 5.2%. I don't think so. You know, if it grew, and we're not sure about that, but if it grew, it was like maybe 1.5%. But Sandy, even if it grew 5.2%, they're still in mortal danger, because that's not fast enough to service the debt that now exists. China has just too many high-speed rail lines to nowhere, too many tall buildings, too much of this, too much of that. They've got to pay for it, and they don't know what to do. They have no solutions. Mao Zedong, you know, is alive and well in Xi Jinping, the current ruler. Xi Jinping reveres Mao. And so really what we've got is a Chinese leader who is taking China in all the wrong directions. China's problems would be very, very difficult to solve if someone wanted to solve them with common sense solutions. But China doesn't have a leader like that. China has a Maoist as a leader. So the country is going to go through an extreme crisis.
Isn't that interesting, the parallel? I never thought of that, Gordon. It's the same parallel here. We're going through the same thing, but different. Our leaders, I would say many of them are Maoists, or they are communists, or some, they're socialists. Their policies are not loyal American policies.
Yeah, they're taking the U.S. in the wrong direction.
Yes, same thing.
So, you know, I've always thought that it was interesting that you've got both China and the U.S. racing to the bottom.
Yes.
Fortunately, China is a lot closer to the bottom than we are, and it's moving a lot faster than we are. But the problem here is that Xi Jinping now has the incentives to lash out, because he realizes that if he doesn't lash out, that the Communist Party will fail.
Wow.
So in order to prevent that, I think that he could very well start a war. Now, it may have a very low chance of success, but remember, he believes, I think, that if he doesn't do this, he is dead for sure. So if you do something really dangerous, maybe it gives you a 10% chance of surviving. We would think no one would do that. It's only 10%. But if you're Xi Jinping, 10% is 10 times greater than you already are.
Because it's all about yourself. It's all about you.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what do you think is going to happen here? First, there's Taiwan. We didn't even talk about Taiwan. It seems to be heating up there. You think that he would... Here we have this invasion of Chinese military here. Then we got this talk heating up with the borders of Taiwan and all these threats and attacks or against our ships or planes or whatever. And so what's the priority? Both? Would it be both?
Well, you know, there are people who know more than I do who think that China's going to invade Taiwan this spring. Now, I don't think so. I think it's a bit more complex than that. But we cannot rule out anything at any place at any time, because the situation in general is so dangerous. I actually think that if Xi Jinping does decide to start a war, it'll be over perhaps the Philippines or maybe Japan. He may stumble into war, but it could very well be Taiwan. The one reason why, there are a lot of reasons why I don't think it would be Taiwan, but one of them is this. Although the people in Taiwan don't think they're Chinese, and we know this from self-identification surveys, the people in China do believe that the people in Taiwan are Chinese. And that's a result of decades of indoctrination. Chinese people believe, apart from Taiwan, that Chinese people should not kill other Chinese people. And that means, I think Xi Jinping understands that a war against Taiwan would be unpopular. And he wants a popular
war.
That's
interesting.
That's not to say he won't invade Taiwan. There's a whole, you know, there's a now Taiwan crisis over Kinmen, which is a Taiwan island, which is just 3 or 4 nautical miles off the Taiwan, of the China coast. That could blow up. But in general, I think Xi Jinping understands that in general, the Chinese people don't want a war right now. They are so upset about what's happening in their own society. But, you know, it's very hard to figure out the way Xi Jinping calculates his interests, because I believe that he can calculate them very differently than the way we think he should.
Right.
So that's why I say we got to be prepared for anything at any place at any time.
Well, the book that Gordon has written most recently is China's Going to War. China's Going to War. And so I commend that book to you. And, of course, share this podcast. And I have to say, Gordon, as a Christian, I have to say to all of you who are probably your jaws dropping and your shoulders are slooped, what do they call that? Drooping is the word. I don't think despair, it's time for despair. There's always been trouble in the world, and we have a wonderful God who does hear the prayers of his people, those that honor and serve him. So don't you dare give up.
You never give up. You never surrender. We must become a moral nation again, as I said. We must become a nation of faith, and we have to believe.
Yes. So, Gordon Chang. And thank you, Gordon. It's always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Sandy.
Sandy Rios on Sandy Rios 24/7.
This is Sandy Rios 24/7 on American Family Radio.
Well, you've heard a lot about saving babies on this show, and that's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you. We must save them. That's why we partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears that heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. And, of course, that is a real miracle right there, a miracle of the heart. If you want to help us, it's $28 per ultrasound. And go to preborn.com/Sandy. That's preborn.com/Sandy. Hi, this is Sandy Rios, and I miss you in the mornings. But now I'm hosting a podcast, Sandy Rios 24/7, which is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com. Well, I finally finished that book. God's Velvet Hammer chronicles God's call in my life from a small town girl to Berlin, Germany, Radio Moscow to North Korea to Washington, D.C. I talk about Sasha Girl. That was my disabled daughter. I talk about I've Got the Music in Me. That's a chapter on my music life. Lost in India and Other Adventures is hilarious. You won't want to miss it. I talk about my sweetheart, The Blessing of Bruce. And then a mysterious chapter called My Green Face and the End of It All. Oh, I think you'll enjoy it. Like the Apostle Paul, these are my shipwrecks and my adventures. All for Christ and His kingdom. God's Velvet Hammer is available wherever books are sold. And remember, Sandy Rios 24/7 is available at afr.net and sandyrios.com. All right, Sandy Rios back with you. I always love talking to Gordon, and that, of course, reminds me of a lot of things. For one thing, our American military is being decimated. I worry so much about how in the world we're going to face the threats. When Lloyd Austin and President Biden and all the others combined have done everything they can to decimate and discourage people, you know, letting go of people who have the wrong values, forcing the COVID shot, which is what I want to get into now. As a matter of fact, this is a story I want to tell you. Lieutenant Ted Massey was a former U.S. Naval medical officer. So he's out. And he's talking about the effect of the COVID vaccine on those who served. So he has a wife who's actually running for Congress, and they're kind of working together to get the information out. They're talking about the treatment of thousands of service members during the vaccine rollout, how they were just thrown out or forced. No one would listen to them. So Missouri Senator Eric Schmidt has been calling for the rehiring of previously discharged service members with full back pay, rank, and an apology. Mara Massey responds to Eric Schmidt in a surprising way. And, of course, she's the wife of Lieutenant former Lieutenant Ted Massey. She said thousands of service members were treated with disrespect and fired because of tyranny. And to cite recruitment challenges as the reason to bring them back isn't a good enough reason. She said there's a complete lack of trust in the military leadership among those who were not only involuntarily separated, but also those who walked away, including just shy of retirement, those who fought from within but were flagged for promotion, those who didn't want to take the shot but were coerced, and us family members who have been told that our community's mental and physical health is important to that alleged leadership. Accountability is the only answer. Every single voice of service members who suffered because of these illegal mandates should be heard before Congress. Every single military leader who was informed by service members presenting them with the law and still did nothing should be investigated until we remove all those who put their careers above the mental and physical safety of our service members and their families. And just to be specific, hypertensive disease, a heart disease, pulmonary heart disease, heart failure, all forms of heart disease have increased to the five-year average prior to 2022 with surges of 36%, 69%, 62%, 973%, 63%, and 152% respectively. And on the one that we've heard about so much, myocarditis, there has been a 151% increase in myocarditis post-vaccination in the military. All right, all that to say that there was an interaction between Matt Gaetz and Lloyd Austin in the House, and you might have missed that, and I don't want you to miss it, because I think Matt Gaetz agrees with Massey. Let's listen.
You didn't tell the president that you had cancer, that you were being treated for cancer, or that the treatment for that cancer had gone wrong, because you saw it as personal and medical. And I think a lot of us have empathy for you in that regard. But now that you see how personal medical decisions are, will you call for the re-recruitment, restoration of full rank and back pay for the 8,600 service members who were vax mandated out of the military?
No, I won't.
So on March 4th, 2021, you authored a memo. It was entitled Message to the Force. And in that memo, you said that there would be clear and swift accountability for anyone who didn't meet the highest standards of the Department of Defense. Now, however this worked out, we all acknowledge that what you did here didn't meet the highest standards, right? You made a mistake.
I admit it to.
Yeah, okay, so we got that. So then the question is, what becomes the clear and swift accountability? Now, you're not going to be discharged, right? No?
That's right.
Okay, you're not going to be suspended. You're not going to be demoted, and you're not going to have your pay cut. None of those things are going to happen to you, right?
That's right.
Okay, so you come here seeking some grace and some forgiveness. And I want you to know that one of the service members who you vax mandated out of the military sent me the parable of the unforgiving debtor. And it's in the book of Matthew. It's verses 21 to 35. The man fell down before his king and begged him, "Please be patient with me, and I will pay all the debt." Then his master, filled with pity for him, released him and forgave him of his debt. But when the man left the king, he went to a fellow servant who owed him a few thousand dollars. He grabbed him by the throat and demanded payment. His fellow servant sat down and begged him for a little more time. "Be patient with me, and I will pay it," he pleaded. But his creditor would not wait. He had the man arrested and put in prison until the debt could be paid in full. When some of the other servants saw this, they were very upset. They went to the king and told him everything that had happened. And the king called the man who had been forgiven and said, "You evil servant, I forgave you that tremendous debt because you pleaded with me. Shouldn't you have mercy on your fellow servant, just as I had mercy on you?" Then the angry king sent the man to prison to be tortured until he had paid his entire debt.
Well, I wanted you to hear that entire thing. The arrogance of Lloyd Austin, who has ruined so many lives, destroyed families, destroyed their income. So many of you, military men, contacted me on the morning show, and I tried to help, and I couldn't get anyone in Congress to listen. Now, some people are listening now, but it's too late for many of you. And this is infuriating to me. The only thing I can say is, I see, do you not, the hand of God in this? That Matt Gaetz, of all people, I don't know where Matt stands spiritually. I don't thinking normally talks about God. Maybe he does. To quote scripture on the floor of the house so powerfully and remind all of them publicly about God's view of what Lloyd Austin is doing and what many of them are doing too. Wanting lots of grace, wanting everything their way, wanting it cushy, but not giving any care at all to the people they are harming. And I think the point is, it's God that we answer to. Lloyd Austin, in his case, will not have to answer for what he's doing to the Congress, to the president. He won't have to answer for his indigence, for his dereliction of duty, for his insolence. He won't answer for any of that. But you know what? He will. He will. And that's the point to me. God showed up that day in that moment in Congress. Well, I hope you enjoyed this edition of Sandy Rios 24/7. You know you can call us at 662-821-2040. You can write us at sandy@afr.net. You can listen on any podcast platform. And you can go to sandyrios.com and, you know, listen to the show, order the book, whatever you would like to do. Thank you for listening to today's edition of Sandy Rios 24/7.